Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Starseed Radio Academy, empowering Starseed to better serve the planet.
Welcome to Starseed Radio Academy. It's June 15th, 2010, and I'm Arielle Taylor with my co-host Lavendar. In the first part of our show this evening, Lavendar will be talking with T. Roy Dutton in England, who will tell us about his discovery, which he calls astronautics. Mr. Dutton has been a senior engineer analyst for A.V. Rowan Company, Hawker Siddeley Aviation, and British Aerospace in England, where he worked in cooperation with Lockheed, the RAF, and several other European air forces. Because of his analytical and aircraft design background, he's been pursuing his curiosity about UFOs since 1967. He collected sightings data going back 100 years, and over the last 25 years has made a startling discovery that he'll be talking about with us this evening. If you go to richplanet.net and click the online store, you can get his DVD trilogy called We Are Definitely Not Alone. In the second part of the show, Lavendar is going to be talking about the upcoming Teton meetings, where members of the Galactic Council discuss the state of the Earth and her people. She'll give us an idea of what the ET's focus will be for the next 6 months. After that, Lavendar will be doing some free starseed readings for the first callers as time permits. The call-in number is 917-889-8292, which you can use just to listen, or if you would like to comment or ask a question, press 1 after you call in so we know you have something to say. Now, it's my pleasure to introduce Lavendar and Mr. T. Roy Dutton.
Thank you, Arielle, for introducing Roy Dutton to the world. I must say that I discovered this man several months ago, and we have been talking by phone about once a week for some time. I am so excited to have you on our show, Roy, because you have brought so much joy into my life with our talks every week. But most of all, I want to share you with our audience because of your discovery of program activity from space. That's what I'd like to really start to talk about today, is how this all came about for you and what it means to the scientific world and to what it means to the metaphysical world.
Well, basically, a study that I began in 1967, investigating local sightings in the Manchester area, northwest England, led into a global study in which I collected information, good information about strange aerial craft coming from all over the world and going back into history. In fact, the earliest one I picked up was in the 1860s, I think. Now, from there, I, having collected something like 450 of these items over that period, I then began to process them to see if I could see whether there was an astronautical explanation for them. That is, were these things coming from space?
And were they?
And that's what it appeared to be. That appeared to be the case, yes. They were definitely coming from space and disappearing back into space, as far as I could tell from the evidence. And so I was looking for some sort of organized pattern of approach and departure paths from space. And I was just looking at initially for one that I might be able to identify from all this scattered of events all over the world. And it was an extremely difficult exercise. But what happened was, in fact, that it was only when I tried something which seemed to me to be quite ridiculous, and when that things began to fall into place. And the ridiculous element was that these events over the years had seemed to be separated by a period of 65.45 minutes. Now that is in fact, that time in fact divides the 24-hour period into 22 equal parts. Now, I knew that nothing could be orbiting at that sort of period, and I wondered what would happen if I assumed they could, even though we can't, whether they could artificially orbit that sort of period. Now, the period of a satellite, of course, is the time it takes for it to go once around the world, and the normal period for a low satellite is about 90 minutes. And that goes longer as the satellite goes further out from the Earth. So this seemed to be a ridiculous time, but I did try to fit that sort of pattern over the Earth's surface. You see, and as you've seen on the space shots, they can show where the satellite is or where the spacecraft is following a particular spiraled line around the world. And these spiraled lines are separated by the period of the satellite. Now, I found that such spiraled lines did exist that joined up events on the globe very, very unexpectedly. And in fact, one of the major elements of that finding was that they were linking events over a historical period. So
that's amazing. This is just amazing information.
It was to me, and I had difficulty believing it. And certainly, it's the stumbling block for anyone else who is currently conversant with astronautics to be able to understand it. And that is one of the problems I'm having, really, trying to convince people that this really is something that is repeatable. Now, and has been checked out by me now with over 1,000 sightings, at least. New sightings, not the original ones. So that's where I stand on it at the moment. The elements I know that you're particularly interested in is that I also discovered that apart from these tracks over the Earth, which are fixed relative to the equator, and that there are tracks which have different inclinations to the equator, that is to say, they range between 42 degrees inclination to 76 degrees inclination. So they cover a latitude-longitude spread on the Earth of plus or minus 76 degrees. 76 degrees north to 76 degrees south. But the other important discovery was that by looking at the timing of the events under these paths, I discovered that they pointed, if I linked them to the stars that were overhead at the time, a sidereal connection, if I look through see what time the sidereal time was at that time when these events occurred, then there were two distinct paths in space which they seemed to be using to approach the Earth from and to leave the Earth on. So it seemed to me that they were using one of these paths, one of two, in this particular mode, and they were coming from somewhere on those, they're like hoops in the sky, basically.
So let me ask you, does this match my discovery of star markings a little bit? Were the May 15th and the November 15th alignments that I've been tracking?
Well, that is how we came to be talking to each other, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Because you felt that some of the discoveries I'd made at that time did link up with some of your astrological studies. Now, the other element in the astrological system of things, is that I found that these paths were used, sightings occurred, when these paths, one of them, or the other, or both, were aligned with planets in the solar system. So there are planets at those orientations, or comets sometimes. As if they were using these things, comets and planets, as markers in space, using them as navigational markers, you see, to sort of, as we use stars, the pole star or whatever is a marker, and when we navigate, these things were using, it would seem, planets, a planet or a comet, as a marker to determine which path they would use. So if the comet or planet happened to align with one of their paths, one of their chosen paths, then that was the one that was usually used to produce the event on the Earth.
Let me ask you, couldn't we just take us through just for a moment how you, say a Pleiadian ship comes down, drops off a drone or a little spaceship, and then comes back and picks it up later. Can you give us a little bit more insight on how you observe this?
Well, I was back engineering it from the actual events on the ground, in the atmosphere, on the ground, and I'm working backwards to what might have happened in space. And it did seem as if these things coming in from space were motherships of some kind, which seemed to deposit the things into the atmosphere in a targeted area. They'd choose the target beforehand, presumably, and then they would sometimes come back, or another craft would come along and pick it up later. And the time between those two events determined the time when the object was on its mission in the atmosphere. And this was particularly astoundingly true for when I looked at abductions. The time when the people involved, CD4s, people were involved, when they first saw the craft in their vicinity, and then the time when they, and then they lost time, and the time when they saw the craft leave, or came round from their blank space, corresponded to two of the predictions, the two consecutive predictions.
So we kind of call this predictable timing for close encounters, right?
That's right, yeah. Of course, I couldn't predict where they were going to happen next, because we're dealing with a very intelligent set of creatures, and they decide for themselves which area they're going to target.
Can you give us an example of one of your, say you had someone call you and say, please check this out. Can you give us an example of a short story of someone that wanted you to check out their abduction or their close encounter?
Yes, indeed. I've got so many of those, as a matter of fact. But the first one I checked out, in fact, was after I'd given a lecture to Beaufort in London, and the person who had hosted the lecture, and I'd also acted as my host that night, said to me, there is someone in your area, up in the Manchester area, that's where I lived then, who claims to have had an encounter, you know, a close encounter of the fourth kind, and she gave me a date and a time for this, and could you check it out for me? So I checked it out on the chart I happened to have with me for Manchester area, and this was a hand-drawn one at the time because I hadn't got around to computing these things. And I said, well, it doesn't look right to me, Ken. It was Ken was his name. I said, it's about an hour out, according to my predictions. So he said, oh, I'll get in touch with her and see if she can, you know, perhaps I am an hour out. I only can tell you that from memory. So I went home on the train up back to Cheshire in the northwest, and just taking my coat off, and the telephone rang, and it was this lady herself, and she said, "Roy, Ken has just told me about what happened, and you were right, it was an hour later than he said. How did you know that?"
No, well, that's remarkable. See, that we call that confirmation. It's synchronized timing too. All of this is very, very fascinating to our listeners, I know, because it has to do with star dates and the discovery of program activity from space, predictable timing for close encounters. All of this is so fascinating, and I just really want to commend you for taking the time in your life to record these happenings. And to know that you've done this for 25 years, I mean, you have so much information, and I understand that you're getting ready, well, you've written a book, and you're getting ready to publish.
Over the years, I've written several books, and none of them has been considered to be suitable for publication.
Well, that's because the timing wasn't right. I think people are more inclined to want to buy it now, and when you get ready to publish, we certainly will acknowledge that on our website. And at the end of this show, Ariel will come on, and she will give the address so people can order your DVD collection, which is very fascinating.
I was going to say that I have done that because I haven't been able to get anything published, a book published. So.
Well, you know, it's coming. I really feel this will be the year for that to happen. Yeah.
It would be nice to think so.
Yeah. So, what do you think about these things that are happening in space now? Do you have any inclination of new material or new discoveries that are on the horizon for you, having to do with some of the things that you're hearing in the news about? The thing over Norway, for instance.
Hezdalen, you mean?
Yes.
Well, I looked into that project back in the 90s when I got my first set of data for it. In fact, I purchased a copy of the report the scientists at Hezdalen had produced in, I think it's 1990. Anyway, it's either in the 80s or the 90s, and I did an analysis of all the events they'd recorded, and I got a very high score for it.
Oh, wow.
And sent it off to the scientists there who were investigating it, and they politely thanked me for it. I see. But the big problem, as I said, really, is it's such a major leap in their understanding of what's possible and what's not, because an example was that I contacted a member of the astronautical space department at Southampton University some years ago and sent him some information on this, and he responded, "Well, I can't really comment on this because there's nothing I can relate to."
Well, that's right. Mm-hmm. And when a person cannot relate to a subject matter, they fear it. Mm-hmm. People fear what they don't understand. Also, seems like you told me a few weeks back that someone from the Vatican had contacted you for your information, and they were interested in your discoveries. Can you comment a little bit about that?
Well, I contacted them, actually, because they'd had a meeting at their observatory, the Vatican Observatory, to discuss with people who were involved with SETI, for example, search for extraterrestrial intelligence, to see if what the probabilities were, that there's life, intelligent life somewhere out there in space. And this was apparently the second meeting they'd had, organized by the Vatican Observatory. And so I picked up the people, the names of the people who were involved, and the leading one involved. And on their website, you can look this up yourself, actually. I mean, it's there on the internet.
Oh, that's fascinating.
I got in touch with him by phone. No, sorry, by email. Told him that I had something he might be very interested in. And this was something I co-authored with my very good friend and advisor, Edward Ashpole, who is a science writer and science commentator, and a scientist himself. And so this had actually won a prize in the NIDS, and in the NIDS essay competition. And NIDS was National Institute for Discovery Science, set up by Robert Bigelow in Las Vegas. And he, we wrote this article in a hurry, this essay, and we won a first prize.
Oh, that's great.
So I referred him to this essay, the Vatican man, to this essay, and said, would you like to read it? So he said he would, and I sent it to him by email, and he passed it on. I got a response from him thanking me, and said he passed it on to one of his staff. Now, I haven't heard anything since, but they do know about it.
I'm sure that paper is being passed around. I'm almost sure of it. I wanted to ask you a little bit. Here in America, we have something called cattle mutilations. Do you have cattle mutilations?
Oh, yes, we do indeed.
England?
Mostly sheep, actually.
Mostly sheep.
And I have a colleague, David Caton, and another one, Robert Holtz. They work together. And Phil Hoyle, the three of them up there in the north. Who have been taking special interest in the sheep mutilations up there and have links with the agricultural organization and so on. There is no doubt at all, really, that these mutilations cannot be ascribed to wild animals or loose dogs or whatever, because of the precision of the removal of flesh from the jaws and all that sort of thing. You know? So, yes.
Do you have a lot of recorded incidences with your particular theory?
Well, the trouble is no one generally seems able to pinpoint a time. They know the night it happened, but they don't know when it happened.
Right.
At what time of night it happened. So I haven't really been able to do very much in that respect.
Well, but you've been able to do it with some crop circles in England, right?
Yes, that's true. Back in the early 90s, when I was very much involved with the crop circle scene here, and in Wiltshire and Hampshire, Colin Andrews and company, and there were more than half a dozen, I think, crop circles which had been seen to be formed in either in twilight times, really, towards sunset or in the morning, early morning, in very dim light. But the people had watched these things go down before their very eyes, you see, without any visible means of formation. And so I got information on those events, the location and the time, and did for each, and then did an analysis in my system and found that they were perfect correlations with the UFO activity predicted for those areas, you see. So I have no doubt that they are part of the UFO activity, and I did an analysis of the types of rays in the spiral plots, discovered that there was a mathematical precision about them, and that they couldn't have been produced by any mechanical means because the crop was so perfectly laid down without damage.
So let me ask you, did you notice a particular time of year when there were more crop circles than any other time?
Well, generally speaking, it's in the summer period here.
In the summer period.
Yes, of course, when the crop is growing.
Right.
Sometimes the circles have appeared in the early crop growth period, and late spring and so on, and when the shoots have been laid down, that sort of pattern.
But you know, I'd be very interested to know, Roy, if this May, when we have Pleiadian lineup from the 15th to the 20th,
mm-hmm.
I'd be very interested to see if we have crop circles that happen at that time.
It's a bit early, generally speaking, although, as I said, there were some in very short crops that have been recorded in past years, but the interesting period really is in the sort of June, July, August period in Britain, and southern Britain anyway, where these things are tending to occur most. And the big problem has been that there have been teams of people who have deliberately set out to hoax special patterns, very fancy patterns at night, you know.
Well, those people they're going to fall by their own weight. Truth knows its own source.
Well, they see it as art, a form of art, and I think they come to an arrangement with the farmer, you know, to pay for the damage they cause, but there is some very nice art produced in the crop.
Yes, there is. And I believe that they're coded messages for those that are able to read those codes. I would like to thank you so much for bringing us up to date on your discovery that you have made through all these years.
Talking with Roy
Dutton from England.
Well, I would like to thank Mr. Dutton for sharing his discovery with us, and I want to remind everyone that you can find his trilogy DVD at richplanet.net and go to the online store where you can find the three DVD sets. And next we're going to have Levendar talking about the upcoming Teton meetings, which will be occurring between July 1st and July 7th. First of all, Levendar, can you tell us a little bit about the location and attendance of the meetings?
Yes, thank you, Arielle. They happen at the Teton Mountains in Wyoming. They happen twice a year, July 1 through 7 and January 1 through 7. And the ones that are in attendance inside the mountain, this is a physical meeting. The Great White Brotherhood, Guardians of the Deva Kingdoms, Starship Commanders of Intergalactic Federations, Ascended Masters of the Seven Sacred Cities, the Crystal Brotherhood of the Antares Arcturus Midway Station, at least 6 members of the Crystal Roundtable on the Starship Bethlehem, Ascended Masters of all the 7 Rays of Initiation, and Council members from Northern Shambhala. Those are the heavy hitters. When I say heavy hitters, those are the ones that are mainly in attendance twice a year. Now, the ones that ask to be inside the mountain physically will be contacted, and several on the planet have been able to go in the mountain physically and see these meetings and be part of them in their physical body. But most souls are asked to be ready and available for transfer to the emerald crystal that's inside the mountain, and therefore they'll be in holographic form and they'll be in attendance and will be able to have the new information that's been given to everyone all at once. And these meetings are 6 months in duration. In other words, here's what we plan on putting in motion on the planet to help the planet evolve in the next 6 months. And each soul that is asked to go there holds a certain kind of resonance, a certain kind of frequency in their alignment with the job that they have agreed to do on the planet. You know, a lot of people simply just hold lights. There's a lot of people that live in nursing homes that no longer can function in the outer world. And a lot of these beings that live in nursing homes will be taken to the Tetons and given instructions. They'll come back and they simply hold an energy of light emanation to a certain place where they live. And I always thought that was a very uplifting concept when I was first told about it, because a lot of people feel like their lives are over once they go to nursing homes. So sometimes when you go to a nursing home and see people sitting and maybe they're just staring in space, maybe they're just sitting there holding the light, you know, who knows. So is that kind of what you wanted me to start the...
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. And people who are transported there most likely will not have any memory of having been there?
Most likely, because what happens there is so really mind-boggling that it's hard to integrate with your life when you come back. So they have found that it's much easier on everyone involved to simply be a kind of a secret. It's a secret alliance that you have with yourself when you say, I want to align with the Pleiadians, or I want to align with the Great White Brotherhood or whatever organization. And if I am needed at these meetings, all you have to do is ask three times, and someone will come and escort you to these meetings and bring you back. And then it helps you with your alignment with your mission. It's not about finding a job. It's not about finding a boyfriend. It's about your mission on the planet, evolving the planet and its people to its rightful place, so that sooner or later we will have interstellar commerce with other planets and other people of other planets.
Now, you told me that for the past several days you've been starting to get flashes of what might be discussed at the upcoming meeting.
Yes, we kind of get, I get kind of bulletins about different things, and one of the topics will be the bloodlines and how some of the DNA has gotten skewed through the reptilian bloodline, and some of the Pleiadians and some of the Arcturians and Andromedans have been, you know, saying, you know, we have some really high experiments on the planet, but we've been infiltrated by reptilian energy, and therefore we need something to help put the DNA to sleep on the reptilian DNA so that the original bloodlines can rise and stand up and come forward without all that zigging and zagging that the reptilians seem to place in their bloodlines. So there's a reset button that's going to be happening. We've had reset buttons happen for the last two meetings already, the one last year and one in January of this year. And I think I talked about the reset buttons a little bit, but they've gone to another technology that they're going to help people with, especially those that are really sitting and wondering what they're doing on the planet, can't seem to remember. The Chellian bloodline, say three or four generations back, has decided to rear its head and want to have them, you know, watch TV nonstop, go into porno nonstop, go into drugs, go into alcohol, just be absolutely dysfunctional. And so something had to be done, and so they have devised certain techniques that will be given to people in their sleep. They'll be given to people awake. They'll come through many, many sources. They have backup systems after backup systems about how this will be done, and I thought it was pretty exciting news to think about, you know, the very idea that, you know, some of the junk DNA that the scientists say, well, that's junk, it means nothing. Some of it could be, you know, turned on and be used now and for the reptilian part of the DNA just to go to sleep, you know, it gave me a smile across my lips, I must say. So,
well, I think one thing that I've had several people ask me, which I'd like to ask you now, what about the ET intervention, if there's going to be any, with the oil spill? Will that be brought up at all, do you think?
Well, yes, it's going to be brought up, and it was these things were discussed in the last two meetings about the different places on the planet where certain things might happen because of the Earth shifting and the volcanoes and the earthquakes and some of the, yes, it was brought up about some of the dangers from the ocean. And, of course, this one is very, very bad. It's going to get worse. And I'm not sure that they're going to be able to stop it. I hope that they can. But there's a lot of forces, a lot of energies helping in a lot of directions. And then on the other hand, there's some really heavy Darth Vader energies that are trying to propel it into more disaster. So this is kind of the Armageddon of the Gulf Coast right now. And we're going to wait and see, you know, which team really starts to rise up above it and try to help humanity and help the planet. So, yes, it will be discussed. And there's a lot of technologies that are being offered to clean it up, but you see, they're not moving on any of those technologies. You know, it makes me wonder, you know, who's running the show when they're given alternatives to this problem and no one wants to step forward and try these solutions. It's troublesome.
Well, I saw a video on YouTube about a microbe that will eat up all the oil, and then when it dies, it'll be food for the fish, and there will be no side effects whatsoever. There's a group in Texas, a land commissioner group, that has demonstrated and proven this technology, and I, for the life of me, can't understand. Now, this is an Earth technology. It might have been inspired by the creators, might have been inspired by ETs, but it's there and it's available. And then there's the other side of the question, does it have to be so bad to shake people out of their complacency and really light a spark under the quest for alternative energy sources?
And that's the upside of this terrible disaster, is that this now will really propel a lot of alternative energy sources to come to the planet. So, there's an upside to this. Also, I wanted to talk about another topic that will be discussed in great length, and that's the walk-ins on the planet and what is happening with the walk-ins. And several people have asked me to talk a little bit about what happens when a walk-in comes. There are several ways a walk-in can come. First of all, they can come through an accident or through illness and take permanent control of a body. Or they can come as a temporary attachment. A temporary attachment comes because they have an interface with the being, and they'll come to kind of slip down over the body with the brain and the emotional system and the etheric system. And what may happen for about 3 days, the person will wake up and they're very depressed. They can't function. They are on the verge of, you know, being bipolar and maybe go bipolar for a little while. Then on the fourth day, they kind of just snap out of it, and all of a sudden they have a lot of energy and they get a lot of things done. And their mission becomes more clear, their alignments are clear, their voice and their actions seem to have more direction, because the walk-ins, I find, really function in the now. They don't really care about the past or the future. I mean, they care in ways not like what we care about. In other words, if a walk-in comes, they're present for the moment. And when you're in motion, and when you're doing something that's going to affect a lot of people, or if you have a special mission that you're on and they're here to help you, they're in the now moment of helping you. And they may stay for a week. They may stay for an hour. You never know how long they're going to come and stay. And I have found that sometimes after they come for, say, a couple of weeks and they leave, then you'll go through that same period of depression and lethargic and bipolar and half crazy. And, you know, you look at chocolate a lot.
Well, when you do have a walk-in, or is that the same as an overshadow?
Yes, a walk-in can be an overshadow where they come for short periods of time. Now, the permanent walk-ins, they're here for the duration. And however, I have seen other walk-ins come and replace other walk-ins. In fact, I have a person I've been working with for over 20 years. I can't even begin to tell you how many walk-ins I have encountered with this one. I see them come and go, you know, like 3 or 4 months. And that's a very unusual case, of course. But when you have people that are on global assignment, that have decisions that are made that are going to affect millions of people, that's kind of the way it works. And if you look at Obama, I mean, how many walk-ins have you seen in him in the last few months? Several. And this may account for some of the behavior that we've witnessed.
Well, if you have anything else you'd like to say about the Tetons before we open up the lines for the callers.
Well, I would just like to say that that the Teton meetings, I think, are going to be very volatile and very impressive this year, because we're getting closer and closer to the countdown of the evolving planet, and a lot of starseed, a lot of walk-ins, indigos, crystal children. A lot of programs are going to be put in motion. A lot of kids that were born back in the 80s and the early 90s are going to become very active now with taking their place in the scheme of things. So we have all these young people that are rattling on the planet. And I'm very excited, you know, to know a lot of them, because, you know, it's in their hands. You know, the older people will be leaving the planet, but they'll be in charge. And I'm pretty excited about the ones that are going to be left in charge. So, yes, you can open up the lines now if you want.
Okay. The call-in number is 917-889-8292. And if you are already on the line, if you have a comment or question for Lavendar, press 1. And we have a caller from the 928 area code. 928, you're on the air. Do you have a question or comment for Lavendar?
Hi, Lavendar. It's Muggsy.
Well, hey, Muggsy.
I have questions about when the Pleiadians or the Andromedans are going to really start helping to get rid of the black cabal, or when we'll see signs of that.
Oh, you're going to see. Well, actually, it started happening last year, but you're going to see the timetable's been kind of moved up, and you're going to start seeing more and more of the black cabal disperse. They're fighting among themselves right now. It's like the snake that's eating its tail, and they're splintering off into little groups and factions, and they're dissolving themselves. You're going to see a lot of it. It's happening.
So is it? I've read where they are actually planning on taking the black cabal out and moving them to a planet with dinosaurs, so that they can learn the value of human life and adjust their thinking. Are you in alignment with that too, or have you heard that?
No, not really, because it's played really on a different kind of chessboard. They're taken to places where they can't hurt anybody. Let's put it that way. They're in quarantine. They take them to quarantine.
One of the things that I'm excited about is the opportunity to really grow, not only spiritually, but intellectually, and all of the glass ceilings that have been placed on us for 6,000 years. Those are all going to be removed. How soon before they give us our technology that we've actually designed and created for years and it's been hidden from us?
Which technology? I don't know what your which technology.
The zero point energy.
Oh, are you talking about alternative energy for the planet?
Yeah.
Well, Tesla brought it years ago, and it was J.P. Morgan that stopped it. So, that see, all these Tesla kids that, you know, I've been working with for years, they're starting to come forth, and we'll see a lot of Tesla kids and their technologies come forth with the clean energy on the planet. We've had it for a very long time. It's just that the powers that be just didn't want to let us use it. So now that time is upon us, and they're going to be in charge. The Tesla kids and their technology will be in charge. It makes me very happy.
Me too. Do you have any time of when they're going to release all this technology to us so we can advance as a society?
Well, the technology is already here. They've already released the technology on this planet. And these Tesla kids have been holding it. And our government has a lot of it already. And private industry has it already. And so you'll be seeing, you know, a lot of these clean energies and all these technologies coming forth. In fact, a lot of these technologies that they're talking about now for solutions for the oil come from these Tesla kids. You know,
I'd like
to
interject right here. I think that the technologies that the government has been made aware of, whether it's been brought through inspiration through the Tesla kids or developed by people right here on Earth, it's going to be an act of desperation. It's like, okay, we've been holding this, and we didn't really want to give it up yet, but now we have to. And then I think the oil spill is a good example of that. There's going to be a move of desperation when they have no other alternatives.
Right.
Then they will start releasing the things that they have. But unfortunately, I think it will be in a time of crisis rather than because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah, and that's where you get to say, we'll say, you see?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, how do the Pleiadians or the Andromedans feel about the genetically modified foods?
They don't think about it like you just asked that question. They have watched it. They have seen what this is all, you know, energy doesn't lie. Only people do. And they noticed that the old Atlanteans that came back here were part of that little group that wanted to modify the food and do different things. And they allowed it to happen. Because it was part of the experiment and part of the process. But they also gave some starseeds some information on how to counter it. There's always countermeasures for the modified food and the genetically modified food. And it was allowed. It was allowed because it was part of the experiment. Once I got really a hold of how the experiments work, I took the judgment of what I used to think about how things should be run. I changed my mind totally. Because what I think would be an atrocity to them is just an experiment. I know that sounds kind of harsh, but that's kind of the way they look at it.
And what about the 2012, December 2012?
I think that timeline has been speeded up. I think we're looking at more like October of 2011. That's just my head on things that I've been receiving information on, that some timetables have changed a little bit, especially since the Earth went on a little strange wobble during the Chile earthquake.
Is that the golden age that you're thinking that they're moving up?
Probably.
Wow. Okay, well, thank you very much, ladies. I enjoyed it. I'm going to listen now.
Okay, thank you, Mugsy.
Thank you, Mugsy. We have one more caller with their wanting to ask a question or make a comment. Before we move on, a lot of these answers and questions that people have been asking and are asking have just been released in an e-book, which I wanted to mention. It's called 50 Questions and Answers, A Celestial Point of View, and you can find it on our website, starseedhotline.com. It is a transcription of a transmission from the Antares Arcturus Midway Station that Lavendar received, and we have put it in an e-book form. So check it out when you get a chance. We have a free preview on the website, and it will answer a lot of these questions. Now I'm going to move on to our next caller that has something to say. Area 281, you're on the air.
Hello. This is Kathy.
Hello, Kathy.
Hi. Michael, I've listened to the recordings of your January meetings that you had on your website, and I was really intrigued with the message about our paths being interrupted by the hazards for starseeds. And you touched on it tonight regarding the reset button. And what are the ways that we can protect ourselves, or the remedies that we can use to get away from the TV sets and get away from the computers?
Yes, thank you for that question. One of the things that was discussed this past year in the Teton meetings has been the electromagnetic field on the planet has been changed, and they were having to reset so many people's bloodlines and their missions because the technology was actually warping their sense of mission. And the electromagnetic pollution has gone way past what anyone thought it was going to be. The cell phone towers, the cell phones, the computers. And then when the wind comes and blows very hard, the wind and this technology together, that creates a really strong schism in people's physical bodies, in their etheric bodies. I don't know if anyone has experienced walking out when the wind's blowing and all of a sudden you just get very angry, you know, like the angry gods after you. But that has been brought to our attention, and, you know, on our website we do have something that you can put on the back of your cell phone, and we also have some real special salt that our friend Alicia has made for us, and I use it every day. I think this salt is just marvelous. It's a transmutation violet salt, and I use it sparingly. I put it on my arms and on my face, and it really calms down the electromagnetics that are flying around. Also, taking silica in your body, eating a lot of watermelon, a lot of oatmeal, taking silica homeopathics, the little tablets you put under your tongue. And the reason I say silica is because your brains function mostly on silica, and the cell phone towers and cell phones, what they do is they burn up the silica in your body. They just burn them out. And if you're not drinking a lot of water and taking silica, then pretty soon you can just be staring at the wall somewhere going, duh, I wonder what happened. So, is that what you wanted me to talk about?
Yes, because I have caught myself that now last year when I lived in another city about a year ago, and when they went to the HD on the TVs, I just lost my TV. I decided not to have it, and it really made a difference in my life. Now I moved to Florida, and my daughter has a TV almost in every room, and now I can really tell another difference. So I'm trying to counteract what I'm being exposed to.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
You know, there are several technologies as well as some simple remedies. Some of them actually are covered in the ebook. As far as getting into a tub of salt water or rubbing salt on you. There's another technology called the Metatron technology, which you can get at the worldpeacemarket.com. There's a free download that you can put on your computer.
Oh, I love it. Yes, that's great.
It quiets the chaos of the electromagnetic radiation you can also get another program that covers your whole house. And it's wonderful technology, and it was given by Archangel Metatron. It's intentional light technology. It's beyond anything I can actually explain.
Is it frequencies that you might play 24/7, or
it's something? It's a program that goes on your computer that you don't need to open it. It just sits there, and it restores a calm energy, like an 18-foot bubble around your computer. And like I said, you can get another program that's larger that goes for your whole house and your yard, and it quiets the chaos that the electromagnetic create. So that's another thing you can do. I'd like to also mention artificial sweeteners, whether it's aspartame, sucralose, Splenda.
Yeah, I've been away from those for a long time. Yeah.
Everybody, if you're listening, stay away from that. It is absolute poison for starseed. Not too good for anybody, but it's really extra bad for starseed.
Also, I'd like to mention the MRS 2000. It's a technology that it's a pad that's got 6 Tesla coils in it. And I noticed that when you use it 8 minutes in the morning and 8 minutes at night, that it puts your cells back to normal. It's kind of expensive. You know, it costs about $4,000. But for people that are really sick and have so much electromagnetic pollution that they can't function, I really, really recommend this technology. I have written a testimonial about it. If you'll write me at lavender@starseedhotline.com, I will send you information on the MRS 2000 and also the things that I have found that it works with. And it's probably one of the most exciting technologies on the planet. I'm very excited about it.
Thank you. I'll hang up and just listen now.
Okay, thanks, Kathy.
Okay.
We have about 3 minutes left. We have some other callers here. If you have something that you want to say, just press 1. Or if you're just listening, that's okay, too. Okay. I guess, hello, do you have a question or a comment for Lavendar? Don't know if they're still there or not. Well, in the 2 minutes we have remaining, I want to thank everyone for listening. And Lavendar, thank you so much for the information on the Teton meetings. They will, again, be occurring between July 1st and July 7th, and they also happen in January 1st through the 7th. Lavendar, is there anything that...
Yes, I'd like to comment about T. Roy Dutton and his discovery and how I felt when I saw the discovery that he'd made, and then I put my discovery of my star markings with his, and what joy came into my life at that time, knowing that someone on the opposite side of the world had found a similar tracking device that matched something that I had discovered. And I'm really looking forward to flying to England and visiting with this man, because I feel like that when we sit down, there's going to be another discovery that we haven't even thought of yet. And just the thought of knowing that that discovery is sitting there in England waiting for my arrival is very exciting for me. So I just wanted to make that comment.
We do so much appreciate the work and dedication that Mr. Dutton has shared with us. And we will be back next week with maybe some more on the Teton meetings as they get closer.
Yes, I'll have more information about different things that will be happening. As we have, you know, a lot of different federation groups that will be coming in, and there are already a lot of them already at the Tetons now, getting ready for these meetings. So I will be getting advanced information for sure.
Well, thank you so much, Lavendar. Once again, thank you, everyone, for joining us. You can visit starseedhotline.com. We have a forum for Starseed for gathering, talking, asking questions, finding answers, which would be starseedhotline.ning.com. And everyone, have a wonderful, wonderful week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Starseed Radio Academy. Visit our website at www.starseedhotline.com.